anybody. And Achari is just kind of was definitely a Cassidy type player.
Yeah.
Played with him, you know, in the minors and on the way up. And you know, they'll miss him, but you know, you can replace him a little more skill wise than you can Johansson. And to me, that's someone. Yeah, and Vaakanainen, I agree. He'll probably be a guy who gets into the defensive rotation there and plays a, you know, if not the whole season, he'll be a force for him. But that just another winger could pop, and that'd be huge, I think. But you know, they're well coached, and they can play. You know, they're skilled, they're fast, and they're rugged. So. They're a tough team. You always talk about, well, how do they match up with this team or that team? They seem to match up well with just about any style. You know, Columbus was a very rugged hockey team.
Yeah.
They knocked them off, you know, and that was a very good team. And the Blues, very rugged team, and things just couldn't quite finish it off.
We're talking with Tom Keegan of the Boston Herald live on the Strictly Right Show here on 91.5 FM WMFO Medford. I opened an interesting segment earlier, about an hour ago, actually, as we continue to talk a little bit about the Bruins before we get back to the Patriots and so forth to wrap it up, about which of the two Stanley Cup Finals losses sting the most. And I mentioned between 2013 and 2019, those last two Stanley Cup losses for the Bruins. Now I want to ask you, like, between the two losses in 2013 and in 2019, which one do you think was the most painful in your opinion?
I think 2019, just because, like you said, it looked like they had what it took, and they were gonna win it, and they were just so impressive on the way to the final that. It's just, I don't know, it just felt like unfinished business very much. And anytime you get to the final and you don't win it, it does. But I don't know, this one stings pretty bad. And that locker room after the game was just, you saw a lot of really sad, empty looks and even some tears. And it was tough to watch, you know, even as many years as I've been doing it, as jaded as I am, it was tough to watch, and you really felt badly for these guys because when they went about it the right way, and it just didn't happen on that night. And it's got to be tough, but sometimes that's a good thing to help propel you for the next year.
I agree.
The whole idea of unfinished business.
I agree, and it's funny because I mentioned it several weeks ago that, you know, like, and I got some looks. I was like, listen, for some strange reason, I've always been a personal believer in history repeating itself. Because if we're going to go back in history, I remember when the Bruins collapsed in the most unfathomable fashion against the Flyers in 2010 and losing that game 7 after being up 3-0 in a game. I still remember, like, yesterday, only to lose 4-3, and then the following year to win the Stanley Cup. And I wonder maybe, perhaps that the Bruins, they can use what happened this past June as not only a motivational factor, but obviously a lesson learned as well for the team. And the last question I want to ask you to wrap it up is, the Patriots defensively, they've looked outstanding so far in this preseason. But the thing that really has irritated me in regards to Tom Brady is, and especially in the game on Thursday night, was that he played okay. He was going to be understandably rusty, but it was just the way that he handled speaking with Jakobi Meyers, for example. Do you think that him missing OTAs definitely had an impact on him and his ability to be able to build chemistry with the receivers, especially considering that there's so many question marks around in this group?
I don't think so. And I like the way he handled Jakobi Meyers. That tells you he thinks Jakobi Meyers is going to be around, and he's already schooling him. I saw him do the exact same thing last year, and I forget the opponent, but it was a home game. And Edelman was supposed to keep going, take a route deeper, and he cut it off. And it was the exact same reaction. He chewed him out, too. If you're not chewed out by Tom Brady, then he thinks you're not worth wasting his time on.
Yeah.
So I really think that, and Myers said, wow, it was a real moment for him, like, wow, I'm actually getting chewed out by Tom Brady. He was, like, kind of proud. I talked to his college coach, Jacoby Myers, and he's so high on him and couldn't believe he didn't get drafted and said that 40 times why, and he's a football player is what he said. And Dave Doran, the North Carolina State coach, he said, I like football players. I don't care what the stopwatch says. This kid's a football player. And Doran would know. He's a great judge of talent. They've had 11 players drafted in the last two drafts, his first two recruiting classes. And Jacoby Myers wasn't one of the 11. So, I'm excited about this guy. And maybe he's just a backup who doesn't play much this year. And maybe the majority of the catches he makes for the Patriots will be thrown by Jared Stidham or whoever is Brady's successor in a couple of years.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to have you on the show this morning. I really enjoyed it very, very much. And I'd like to have you again on the show very soon. We'll definitely keep in touch and talk more about it.
All right. I appreciate you having me on and following me on Twitter at Tom Keegan Boston. That's Tom Keegan Boston. Thanks a lot, Shukri.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you for calling to the show.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was Tom Keegan of the Boston Herald, who joined us live on the Shukri Wright Show on 91.5 FM WMFO Medford. Coming up next, we should have Charlie Ricker of the Internet Baseball Writers Association of America joining us live. Coming up next on the Shukri Wright Show, this is Shukri Wright. You are listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. Welcome back to the Shukri Wright Show. This is Shukri Wright. You're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. On the line now is Charlie Ricker of the IBWAA, Internet Baseball Writers of Association of America, joining us live on the Shukri Wright Show on 91.5 WMFO Medford. Good morning, Charlie. How are you doing today?
Good morning, sir. How are you? I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on.
My pleasure. My pleasure. I'm glad you're able to join this morning because I'm a big baseball fan. And I'm sure a lot of the listeners are also big baseball fans, especially living in Red Sox Nation and all in all. So I definitely want to get your take on how you think the 2019 season has been progressing so far, just from an overall standpoint.
Overall standpoint, I'd say it's been very entertaining. I'm thinking with the reworked baseball that Commissioner Rob Manfred denies tampering with, there's been a lot more home runs.
Yeah.
Even teams like the Dodgers, who aren't traditionally home run hitting teams, they've had a bunch of home runs from their guys like Cody Bellinger and Justin Turner, mm-hmm. and even their rookie sensation Will Smith. The season has been interesting. The Yankees have been running away with the AL East, and even the Red Sox, they looked a lot better last night, hitting a bunch of home runs. And ordinarily, even with the Red Sox admitting that it's more or less the lost season, they're still 8 games above 500.
Yeah.
Ordinarily, they'd be right in the hunt with that type of record, but it's been interesting.
You know, one thing that I've always been fascinated with is the history of baseball. I'm a person, I love history in general, but there's something about history when it's intertwined with baseball, and we talk about, you know, legends, and we talk about all-time great players. And, you know, this past July, we had baseball's first ever unanimous player inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame in Yankee closer Mariano Rivera. So my question to you is a two-part question. One, why do you think that no player has not been unanimously voted in as of yet prior to Rivera? And also, do you think we will ever see another player unanimously inducted into the Hall of Fame after Rivera?
I think with Mariano being the first unanimous, I think it'll be a bit of a gateway for more players in the future being unanimous elections to the Hall of Fame. I think in the past, I think a large part of it is the history of the voting, where somebody always has to say no and deny a person a vote. The person escapes me a few years ago. The player that should have been elected unanimously.
Yeah.
I think there was one voter, and I want to say it's Ken Gernick, maybe. I admit I'm not up to speed on that, but I think a lot of it was the fact that somebody always voted no. And like I say, I think with Mariano being the first unanimous, I think we'll see more. Maybe even Derek Jeter for 2020. But I have a feeling that there's going to be some folks who will look at his defense, or, you know, Derek wasn't the greatest on defense, but he did work hard to improve it. Even as a minor leaguer, his first year in the minor leagues, I think Derek had 56 errors at shortstop, so he worked on it.
Wow. You know, you talk about Jeter, who next year, in my opinion, I think is the only one that's a slam dunk. It's a slam dunk candidate who's going to get in, period. However, in looking ahead to 2020, for example, you had guys like Kurt Schilling, who was on 60.9% of the ballots, as well as Barry Bonds, who was on 59%, and then Larry Walker, and so forth. So my question to you is, outside of Jeter, who, I mean, I think we're both in agreement that he's going to get in next year on his first ballot, do you see anyone else between Schilling, Clemens, Bonds, Walker, maybe Omar Vizquel, who will be entering his fourth year on the ballot, getting into the Hall of Fame for next year, 2020?
I think Kurt Schilling deserves to be in. I mean, I know he's a polarizing figure politically nowadays.
Yeah.
I think that's going to hurt him a little bit, but based on his playing career alone and his postseason, Schilling was excellent in the postseason. Of course, everybody remembers the 2004 bloody sack.
Mm-hmm.
But also, he was with the Phillies in 1993 when they made it to the World Series against the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah,
he pitched very well in that postseason as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think Schilling deserves to be in based on his postseason and of course his regular season stats over his career. Now, Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds, I think they stand a very good chance of getting in. I believe Clemens had 354 total
yes.
regular season wins in his career. And, mm-hmm. of course, Barry Bonds hit all those home runs 15, 20 years ago. Of course, they're both tied in with possible performance-enhancing drugs. But nonetheless, I think they could be in, as well as Larry Walker. I can see him making a big leap as well. Andy Pettit, too. I think he also stands a good chance. He's another player with a great postseason pedigree, as well as winning well over 200 games in his major league career.
We're talking with Charlie Ricker of the IBWA, the Internet Baseball Writers Association of America, joining us live on the Shukri Wright Show on 91.5 FM WMFO Medford. The thing that stands out to me is that we talk about guys like Bonds and Sosa. I mean, unfortunately, you got to include Andy Pettit as well with his admission of using HGH to heal back from an injury he had in 2002.
Yeah.
My question to you is, do you think a day will ultimately come in which that players who use PEDs who played in the 90s as part of the steroid era would be inducted into the Hall of Fame? And if so, should there be a separate wing dedicated to those players? And should they even be inducted in at all?
I think they should be inducted in because even though they've been tied in with performance-enhancing drugs, they're still part of baseball history nonetheless, and it's pretty hard to ignore it. I mean, just because they did excel on performance-enhancing drugs, you just can't sweep it under the rug.
Yeah.
I mean, the games were played, the postseasons were won. I mean, it is a part of history, no matter what a person personally feels about whether or not it's the right thing to do. I'm not a fan of people who did PEDs, but nonetheless, it's still history.
You know, it's interesting that we have a Hall of Fame in which that a seven-time Cy Young Award winner is not in the hall. Barry Bonds, seven-time National League MVP player, not in the hall. Like, it truly, if the Hall of Fame is supposed to represent the greatest of the greatest players of all time, why is it that those players have had such a hard time getting in? And then this is also going to be entering their ninth year on the ballot, actually their eighth year on the ballot in 2020. So the thing I'll ask you is this: for guys like Clemens and Bonds, for example, who never tested positive for PEDs, yet the accusation is strong against both players, do you think that at some point that Major League Baseball has to say, you know what? They never tested positive. Maybe it's really time that we say that, you know what, both guys, they deserve to be both in. Because if you're just looking at just based on just what they accomplished alone, they're both 100% slam dunk Hall of Famers, if you ask me.
Absolutely, they're 100% Hall of Famers. And I think some of the reasons, I think part of why they haven't been elected yet is because their interactions with the folks who do the electing, which is
the media.
Baseball Writers Association of mm-hmm. America. Yes, the media. Bonds had a reputation for being quite surly, and as did Roger Clemens as well. I do think that they deserve to be in, despite what certain voters think about those players personally. I mean, you can't ignore what they've done. Like you said, Bonds is a 7-time MVP. He's hit the most home runs in MLB history with 762.
Yeah.
Clemens with 354 regular season wins, all the strikeouts. Yeah, they absolutely deserve to be in. And I think if writers don't vote them in, I think there has to be something done, whether it's with the Veterans Committee or just whatever it takes, I guess. Yeah, they absolutely deserve to have their day and be inducted into the Hall of Fame.
We're talking with Charlie Ricker of the IBWA, the Internet Baseball Writers of America, Association of America, joining us live on the Sugar Wright Show here on 91.5 FM WMFO Medford. Another question that I have for you is this. When we look at the game as it currently stands, and a lot has been made about the pace of the game and the game dying and so forth, what is something that you see in today's game of baseball that makes you say, I'm concerned where this is going and what needs to be done to help make this a more watchable product? Because I have heard and read in the last several weeks, guys like including Lou Piniella himself, who is an all-time baseball head, well known in the baseball world, that today's product on the field is just unwatchable. Like what do you think about that?
I agree with Lou Piniella. It seems like nowadays you see home runs or strikeouts.
Uh-huh.
It seems like there's not as much strategy being used anymore. Stolen bases are rarely ever happening now. Moving players over, such as sacrifice bunts, it just seems like it's not a well-rounded game anymore, and that is concerning as a baseball fan and as a member of the media. I would like to see things balance out a little bit more. I would like to see less home runs. I mean, I realize MLB is trying to market itself to non-traditional fans, but I think it's coming at a price to the game. And
yes,
as I said, it's very concerning to me.
And
the thing that
stood out to me specifically, just looking at the 2019 season as a whole, is that, you know, and you hit on it, like, you don't see strategy anymore. And I remember a time growing up, and even as passionate of a baseball fan as I am to this day, like, where you turn into a National League game, you know, you're gonna see like the bunt, like you'll see like a suicide squeeze or the hit and run or like hitting behind the runner, like things like that. But you don't see that anymore. And as you mentioned, like it's all home runs or nothing. And like you mentioned, the strikeouts or the pitchers are striking out guys at a record setting pace and so forth. So my question to you is, like, from both as a member of the media and as well as a baseball fan, do you think that the baseball has a lot to do with it in the way that it's made, or do you think that And I know this is harkening back to the 90s, but do you think there's something else potentially in play as well that isn't only limited to just the baseballs themselves?
You know, I think there has been a change to the baseball itself. It seems like it's wound tighter. The seams, there's not as many seams, which makes it harder for a pitcher to control the ball and where it goes, leading to more mistakes, which sometimes end up in the seats over the wall in the outfield. I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure it's not performance-enhancing drugs, although I'm sure there are players who are certainly trying to gain a competitive edge one way or another.
Yeah.
I think between the ball itself and pitchers not being able to throw the ball necessarily where they want to, I think that's a big problem. And like we said, it's resulting in less skill moves, like moving players over, suicide squeezes, and stolen bases. I think there needs to be a healthy balance somehow, and I think there probably will be with all the media coverage that this juiced baseball, so to speak, is causing. I think we'll see some changes probably in 2020. We'll have to wait and see.
And last question I'll ask you before I let you go. Given the way that the season has gone so far in terms of Major League Baseball, who do you think will ultimately meet in the World Series this October?
Let's see. Well, I think the Yankees are certainly making a big push to making a postseason berth and hopefully going into the postseason. I'm a Yankees fan, born and raised since the early 80s.
Yeah, same here.
I think Houston's definitely going to make a... I can see the Astros and the Yankees meeting in the ALCS.
Yeah.
Atlanta, the Braves and the Dodgers, I can see them both going deep into the postseason. They've added players to help, you know, shore their teams up and make that postseason push.
Yeah.
But even teams like the Mets, I mean, a couple months ago, who would have thought they'd be even talked about possibly making the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
So to meet in the World Series, it'd be kind of neat to see the Yankees and the Dodgers meet in the World Series, as their rich history of their past. They've met each other in the World Series a bunch of times, dating back to the 1950s. Ironically, they're playing each other this weekend, and the Players' Weekend across Major League Baseball.
Mm-hmm.
I could see the Yankees and the Dodgers.
Thank you so much, Charlie, for coming on the show. It definitely was a big blast to speak with you this morning, and we definitely got to chop it up again very soon, especially as we head towards October in the Major League Baseball postseason.
I appreciate you having me on, Shakri. I look forward to talking to you again soon. Thank you for having me on.
Definitely. My pleasure. Have a good one.
You too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. That was Charlie Ricker of the IBWA. And coming up next, we're going to take a quick break. But coming up next, we're going to have Robert Cobb of the NSYNC magazine coming up next around 8:30 on the Shukri Wright Show. This is Shukri Wright. You are listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford Tufts Freeform Radio.
Do you love classic rock but hate the lack of variety on classic rock stations? Then tune in to Classic Rock Mine. Classic Rock Mine delivers classic rock that rocks. From bands you know, like Grand Funk Railroad, Mott the Hoople, and Uriah Heep, to bands you don't know, like the Flower Traveling Band, Papo's Blues, and Nectar. Classic Rock Mine. It's the best classic rock you've never heard. Saturday nights from 9 to 11 on 91.5 WMFO Medford, Tufts University Radio.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Shukri Wright Show. This is Shukri Wright. You're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. Just continuing on with a very busy morning here on the Shukri Wright Show. And live now from Florida is joining the show Robert Cobb, the CEO and the owner of InSync Magazine, who joined us live on the show this morning. Good morning, Robert. How's it going? Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you very much. It was an honor to be on the show. And yes, it is something else. Forgive my voice is a little hoarse from being at the Browns Buccaneers game last night. And you can refer to it as INSC or the Inscriber. I know it's like InSync, but yeah. But beyond that though, last night was a great game overall. I will say this, the Browns did look a little sloppy. I mean, you also got to throw into the fact that Baker, you know, he's working with a bunch of second-string receivers and really trying to establish chemistry with them, and no Odell, no Jarvis, none of the big major starters. But considering all the hype the team has gotten throughout the offseason, a bad, sloppy game like last night, they're going to get dragged. So, yeah, that's going to be fun.
Yeah, so I just want to go back to something you said just a few moments ago. Like what would you prefer for me to refer the magazine or publication as again? Say that again.
The Inscriber Digital Magazine.
The Inscriber Digital Magazine, gotcha. So the first thing I want to ask you is, as it relates to the Browns, and specifically Baker Mayfield, you know, a lot of the discussion this week has surrounded around his comments in the GQ magazine in regard to the Giants drafting Daniel Jones. And I got to ask you, like, how did you take the comment that Baker Mayfield made to us about Daniel Jones? Did you take it as something as him being obnoxiously cocky, or did you see it as he has a point, considering that there are so many people, including myself, who was critical of the Giants taking Daniel Jones at sixth overall during this past April's NFL draft?
Honestly, I thought the statement was pretty accurate, because they made a huge mistake in passing on Jersey boy Dwayne Haskins. I'm not saying it because I'm an Ohio State fan, but just the reality of it is that Haskins proved himself at a much higher level in college than Daniel Jones ever did. And the fact that, again, this is just an example of how the media takes stuff out of context and twists it to create a story, create clickbait, create drama, create news, is because it's not what he said, it's the fact who he is and what he said, because he plays for the Browns, and the Browns are, you know, the preseason media darling and stuff, and they're to be the target of a lot of criticism. And Baker, I love him to death. He's very outspoken. The city of Cleveland loves him. He's like a hero there. But he's got to be careful, too, because it's pretty an unnecessary distraction that shouldn't even be there. So, and he even clarified it, too. And I love how he responded by saying it's just another example of the media trying to create and stir news, and he didn't mean anything by it. And it's a shame that it's now beginning to turn into a thing where he may get dragged, get, you know, poked at by the media for something that he said that, quite honestly, he said the truth of. And I will say this, 2 years ago, before we got Beckham, me and a good buddy of mine, we went to the Browns preseason game against the Giants in Cleveland, and I got to meet and talk to John Mara himself, one of the nicest, most classiest people you will ever meet. Nice, firm handshake, absolute gentleman. And the Giants, no, I think they may see something that we may not have seen in the draft process. And so them taking Jones, maybe they dislike his height a little bit better. You know, he's a little bit more mobile. I mean, again, I don't know. I can't speak for them. But The fact that his comments are being taken way out of proportion like this is just beyond stupid.
We're talking with Robert Cobb this morning, CEO of the Inscriber Magazine, live on the Shukri Wright Show here on 91.5 FM WMFO Medford. You know, this preseason has had so much headlines and storylines around the league and whatnot, and especially around the NFL. And I gotta ask you, even as I'm about to ask this question, there's a part of me that's getting really irritated with the whole Antonio Brown situation. And my question to you is this. Do you think that Antonio Brown's grief with the NFL in regards to his helmet is justified? Or do you think that he's just being an absolute diva who's becoming a pain in the thorn in the side of the Oakland Raiders?
Okay, well, that's actually a very good point, and I agree with you completely, because I wrote an article on the site saying if he's a game changer or a headache. And I think the headache part's becoming more relevant to game changer because he hasn't been on the field. And that, in all honesty, it is becoming really annoying and really immature. He's really making himself look like a complete, total diva. I mean, when I first heard about it, I'm like, are you kidding me? Over a helmet.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Over a helmet. I mean the fact that you got yourself traded out of Pittsburgh, who's one of the most able and most well-run franchises in all of sports, owned by the other great family of football, the Rooneys.
The Rooneys.
Great. And I'm like, you got yourself shipped out from Pittsburgh to Oakland to play with another really good quarterback in Derek Carr, who I think will have a bounce back here. But you're going to file a grievance and threaten to quit over a helmet. Honestly, though, this is not that surprising, because I used to live in Pittsburgh for 15 years, and I have a lot of friends still in Pittsburgh, and I can provide third-party accounts the fact that, in person, Antonio Brown is I wouldn't say unhinged, but he's got some serious, like, drama issues, and he's very quirky, and he's very flamboyant and outspoken, and he's had lots of run-ins with the law in Pittsburgh, there's incidents in Miami, there's incidents in Ross Township. I mean, the off-the-field stuff, I feel is somehow seeping into the stuff on the field now, because, you know, he and Ben Roethlisberger clashed over stuff, and yet Ben made him, not the other way around. And now he's playing for a tier two quarterback in Derek Carr, and now you want to jeopardize that over a freaking helmet. Honestly, he needs to go up and figure out either, this is Mike Mayock's side, he's either he's in or he's out. But that's it.
You know, even when I first heard the story, my thought was, this is absolutely you gotta be kidding me. Listen, Tom Brady had something similar, but it wasn't blown up in the media the way that this story was. But it was like, okay, he didn't like it. He'll just have to adjust to the new helmet. Whatever, no big deal. Because and even he wore the new helmet in Thursday night's game, preseason game against the Carolina Panthers. So to me, that whole thing is just completely asinine and just childish on his part.
Completely. It's beyond asinine. It's like, I mean, there were rumblings in Pittsburgh about him being a total diva, about him clashing with teammates, about various other quirky stuff, and this all confirms, you know, obviously what I've heard and stuff that my friends have told me for years about him, that he is a quirky, flamboyant dude, and, you know, and he always has to be the last one in terms of, like, getting his voice heard. He has to be the guy. That's why he's also known as Big Chest. he's becoming a big moron. He's becoming, you know, a big head-headed. Can you imagine? No, it's really going to be funny this year, especially in Cleveland, is that if whenever the Raiders travel to another opposing stadium, you better believe there will be fans wearing an Antonio Brown helmet and stuff. I can see that.
Oh,
now.
Man. I can't even begin to, like, fathom what that would be like. I mean, honestly. But the next thing I want to ask you is, in regards to the NFL season starting up and the 100th anniversary season that's starting up on September 5th, in which the Bears will be hosting the Packers to kick off the 100th season. My question to you is, is there anyone that you see right now that will take an early lead as to who may be the NFL MVP in 2019?
Very good question. Who is my, like, early season MVP pick, if I had one off the top of my head?
Yeah.
Just off the top of my head? That is a very good question. And honestly, if there's one player that I think could, like, really come out the gates on fire, I would say, honestly, and I know this is going to be crazy, way off the wall, I say Deshaun Watson of the Texans.
Wow.
Like I said, it's off the wall. You got to look at it this way.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily, if you think about it, but go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. Here's my reason, is that he's got a good offensive line. The Texans just got Duke Johnson from the Browns, who will be an excellent pick for them because he's an excellent running back and wide receiver out the backfield. Mm-hmm. He's already got DeAndre Hopkins. I mean, he's already got, you know, a good defense to help give him time to, like, do what he needs to do. But also the fact that Deshaun Watson, he's a baller. He's a gamer.
Yeah.
And he makes plays. And having someone compliment Hopkins with Duke Johnson, now I think the Texans offense is going to go to a whole new level of scary, because honestly, Deshaun Watson is an amazing player.
Yeah.
He's got to learn to not take so many sacks. He's got to learn to live and die another day. Live just to throw the ball away if he has to, instead of trying to play hero ball all the time. But to be honest, though, I like Watson. I think he's going to do something special this year.
Yeah, we're talking with Robert Cobb of the Inscriber Magazine, joining us live on the Shuker Wright Show on 91.5 FM WMFO Medford. And the next thing I want to ask you is, You know, when we talk about like the NFL in itself, and I'm going to tie it in directly with the Inscriber magazine. What is something that you want listeners to know about the Inscriber magazine and what it entails in terms of sports coverage, especially as it pertains to the NFL and even across other leagues?
Okay, well, thank you. And what the Inscriber magazine covers, it covers a lot of analyst and opinion content. We were just at the Pro Football Hall of Fame for the enshrinement ceremony, which is amazing, by the way. Yeah. Thank you very much for the opportunity. Definitely looking forward to it. I mean, we really try to cover sports in our own unique way. I mean, we're not ESPN, we're not Bleacher Report, we're not Fox Sports. We don't try to be, but we do offer our own unique analysis on sports and sports topics and stuff, and that we really try to produce content that you won't find anywhere else, and definitely keep it professional, well written. I'm a firm believer of quality over quantity, and that, you know, I feel what we do. But I definitely feel that NFL fans will have a very good place to look up some interesting and unique stories and story angles at the Inscriber. And that there is one thing I do want to also talk about that I think we should cover real quick, is that the whole Jay-Z, Eric Reed thing.
Yeah, by all means.
What are your thoughts on that? I got some interesting thoughts, too.
My thought on it was that I was shocked when I first heard about the deal, because I've always viewed Jay-Z as, like, you know, he's obviously one of the big names in hip-hop rap, I mean, as you and I know, and his status in that industry is already well known, and that's translated very well into sports business, you know, like being the owner and the head of Roc Nation and so forth. And now, him signing a long-term deal with the NFL, I'm not really sure exactly what is the reason and what's the purpose behind it. But the comment that really stood out to me was, we are already past and this is as it pertains to when he was talking about like Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reed situation. Like, we're already past that. Like, what are we going to do? Like, it's not a shocking comment as it was said, but rather, what ideas are you bringing to the table to address the issue, the very same issue that caused Colin Kaepernick his career? So that's my grief with Jay-Z, where I don't view him as a sellout, but rather from a very critical lens of how is this going to help and benefit not just only the very cause in which that Kaepernick was protesting for, but rather the issues surrounding the league in regards.
Right, and that's a very good point. And I think looking at it, and I actually had a great conversation with the check-in person when I checked into the hotel down here last night. The fact, I think Jay-Z has a bigger platform, and I think he can actually, you know, do some stuff within the NFL to definitely try to get them on the right track. Because the NFL's got a big, huge black eye in how the way they've handled social justice issues, and also how the way they have handled domestic violence. Mm-hmm. And of course, you got Cole, you know, you mean Ray Rice, Ezekiel Elliott, Greg Hardy. I can go on, and obviously with Colin Kaepernick. In my opinion, the people that are trying to attack Jay-Z, they need to take a step back. They need to look at the whole situation here, because honestly, what did Colin Kaepernick really accomplish other than kneeling? And the funny part is this, is that he only started kneeling after he got benched and that he couldn't play. And I thought he was doing that to draw attention to himself more than actually trying to do something for our community or for those who are less enfranchised and stuff. And I thought it was under the guise of kneeling protest, and it just snowballed from there, and that the message got convoluted, and I felt totally hijacked, you know, by outside forces. And that, you know, you got people like Eric Reed, who's like all of a sudden like his biggest cheerleader and stuff, and I'm like, really? I mean, what did you and Kaepernick actually do to benefit those who needed your help? other than take payout from Nike and then take a and then settle with the NFL. To me, that really didn't accomplish much of anything. And that what Jay-Z is actually, in my opinion, what I feel he may do is actually do something positive. Because now, I mean, you're about to become part owner in the most powerful sports league in the United States. And you're already one of the most powerful icons on the planet. You got a who's who on your freaking Rolodex, right now. So, you know, I think Jay-Z would do more than Colin Kaepernick ever did. And those trying to attack Jay-Z as a sellout, they really need to, like, take a step back and evaluate themselves first for trying to go after Jay-Z. I mean, Eric Reid has done nothing. He's really like a fringe player. And Kaepernick, like I said, he's the one that took the sellout. I mean, that took the buyout from the league and was paid now by Nike. So we got to look at who's talking.
But here's the thing where I disagree with. The thing that I disagree with is that, and not we're not trying to turn it into a whole political discussion. That's not the aim that I'm trying to go here. Is that like he didn't do it because he wasn't playing anymore, and that Blaine Gabbert was going to take over as a starter. If you remember, he was also in San Francisco at the same time in 2016, but rather, he wanted to call attention to a very important issue, and he did exactly just that. Because prior to that, it was something that it was already happening. But if we're gonna be very honest here, if you look back into 2016, there were high profile situations that was sweeping across the nation, in which that Kaepernick, all he did was bring attention to these to this issue by utilizing his platform, and ironically, it was a veteran that recommended him kneeling, not sitting up, because that's what he was doing originally, was sitting the same manner in which that Michael Bennett was sitting, but rather he spoke with the veteran and said, you know what, instead of sitting, take a knee to show respect to those who have passed on fighting for this country, but this isn't. Like I said, this isn't a political discussion, but rather, a part of a larger point that in which that Jay-Z signing the deal with the NFL did it all it did in the words of Shannon Sharp, which I want to touch on briefly before I let you go. He said something interesting, and I'm just going to paraphrase on what he said, and he said that. He was saying something along the lines of that it didn't all, that this all this did was that it just caused between Shannon Sharpe and Eric Reid to have a clash. It's basically you're pitting us against us, basically. Do you think that statement is, or that take by Shannon Sharpe, was accurate? Or
it's totally accurate. It's totally accurate. I agree with it completely. That's the exact same thing.
Go ahead. Explain why.
I think because of how the way you got people now, it's basically become Eric Reid against Jay-Z, and Reid calling the New Deal disgusting, and Jay-Z basically like looking like he's a profiteer, not someone that's actually going to do something. That's why.
And it's interesting because one thing that stood out while I was listening and hearing what Shannon Sharpe was saying, for example, and I don't know if this has been touched on as of yet for an article for the magazine that I don't know, but feel free to interject, is that this has been a long-standing issue for the last couple of years now, and now. The thing that I'm most curious is, what's in it for Jay-Z? What's the next? Because all we know at this point is that it's just speculation. It's just speculation as to what's going to happen and so forth and that's it. So right now, nobody really has a clear definitive idea as to what the plan is and what's the next move moving forward.
Right. Well, I guess to conclude this, is that I guess that's something that all of us will have to find out, but that's definitely going to be a story that we're going to touch on at the Inscribers. What's in it for him? I mean, that's now the biggest question that deserves the answer.
Yeah. It'll
definitely be something that we will address. And that, again, man, this has been an absolutely wonderful, wonderful time down here in Florida. You know, I got a couple photo shoots I'm going to be doing later today. And obviously, you know, the Inscriber, you know, it's just really grown and developed into one of the top respected online digital publications. And it's just mind-blowing about how far we've come in 3 years.
For sure. For sure. It's definitely a go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, no, no. You can go. I'm just listening.
No worries. I want to say thank you for taking the time this morning to come on the show. I definitely had a blast talking with you, and we definitely got to chop it up again real soon.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm always all about having a good conversation, definitely providing engaging discussion and content. And for those who are interested, you can find us online at theinscribermag.com. Our Twitter is at theinscribermag. Our Instagram is at The Inscriber Mag as well. And definitely be sure to check us out, subscribe to us. We have a combined social media reach of over 35,000. Definitely check out some of our pictures, some of our sports content, some of our lifestyle, some of our entertainment and travel, as well as some of the lovely models that we also feature as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on this morning. We'll definitely talk again real soon.
All right. Sounds great. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. That was Robert Cobb of the Inscriber Magazine joining us live on the Shukri Wright Show here on 91.5 WMFO Medford. Final thoughts. We have another interesting week ahead next week in regards to the Shukri Wright Show. We're definitely going to get the ball rolling, at least try to get the ball rolling in terms of college football discussion, as well as continual discussion in regards to the Patriots, the Red Sox, as we officially hit Labor Day weekend next weekend. So stay tuned for that. And again, you can follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at SWrights915. That's SWRIGHTS 915. So definitely follow the show on Instagram and Twitter for the latest updates and news as it pertains to the Shukri Wright Show. I want to thank Tom Keegan of the Boston Herald, Charlie Ricker of the Internet Baseball Writers Association of America, and Robert Cobb of the Inscriber Magazine for coming on the show this morning on 91.5 FM WMFO Medford. Thanks for all of you who tuned in this morning. This is Shukri Wright signing off until next Saturday. Coming up next, Mike's on Mike is next at 9 o'clock right here on 91.5 WMFO. This is Shukri Wright. You are listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford Tufts Free Farm Radio. Enjoy the day, everybody.
I'm a little together. A dark room with no lights.